From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Congressman Josh Gottheimer, a Democrat from the state of New Jersey. And we're coming to you from his office on Capitol Hill. Congressman Gottheimer serves on the House Financial Services Committee, where he works on three subcommittees: capital markets, securities and investments, oversight and investigation, and the Terrorism and Illicit Finance Subcommittee. While this is Congressman Gottheimer's first year in Congress, he is no stranger to public service. After graduating from the University of Pennsylvania and Harvard Law School, he clinched a job at the Clinton White House as one of the youngest presidential speechwriters in history. After the White House, Gottheimer worked for the Ford Motor Company and Microsoft. Congressman Gottheimer uses his experience in both the private and public sectors in his approach to government service. He firmly believes that it doesn't matter if an idea comes from the Democratic or Republican side of the aisle, only whether it helps communities and people of his district. It's no wonder, then, that Congressman Gottheimer was elected as co-chair of the Bipartisan Problem Solvers Caucus, which focuses on bringing lawmakers together across party lines to find areas of agreement on key issues. During his first year in Congress, Gottheimer has focused on lowering taxes, cutting out-of-date regulations, fighting for education, transportation, veterans care, and first responders. We'll talk with Congressman Gottheimer about the Republican-led Congress's legislative initiatives, the challenges facing Democrats as the minority party, and his assessment of President Donald Trump's first year in office. Congressman Gottheimer, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, Carol.
Well, thank you for hosting us here in your office. And I just wanted to mention to our listeners and viewers that we have a pattern here of interviewing congressmen who are members of the Problem Solvers Caucus.
I like that. That's good.
We interviewed previously Congressman Charlie Dent, Republican of Pennsylvania.
He's a good man.
Exactly. And more recently, Tom Suozzi of New York.
My roommate.
How about that?
I know. I've got to see him every day.
All right. Well, being a freshman Democrat, Congressman Gottheimer, I'd like to get your impression of why you ran for office and how you find the chamber here, the House of Representatives, and your colleagues.
You know, I ran for office because, like most people in our country right now, we're very frustrated with the way things are in government. The fact that people spend way too much time in Washington just fighting with each other instead of actually problem solving, instead of saying, okay, let's sit at the table and figure out how we can get things done. And I've worked most of my career now in the private sector, and you know, we'd show up at the office, and if you're trying to get an agreement done or working on anything day to day, just like you do at home, you may not always agree on everything, but you have to be willing to get to yes and get an 80% of a solution, not 100%. So that's why I decided, you know, I was working at Microsoft and I had just worked on getting something done. We're in an agreement with another company, and you know, we started far apart and we worked it over months and got it done, and I didn't get everything I wanted, but most of what I wanted, and I think the other side felt the same way. And I said, we should be doing more of this in Washington. And so, as you mentioned, I spent the early part of my career working for President Bill Clinton, and he always told us, don't worry if an idea is a Democrat or Republican idea, just worry about if it's a good idea. And that was what I thought the approach we need to bring back to Washington and we need to do more of. So that's why I ran.
But we're in very polarized times, Congressman Gottheimer. So I imagine that's quite a challenge for you. We're further apart, Democrats on the one side, Republicans on the other. What issues are you coming together on, if any, in the Problem Solvers Caucus?
Well, so A, you have to start somewhere, right? Unless we decide to walk away on our government, you have to actually keep trying to bring back the middle and a willingness to work across the aisle. And that, as you point out, takes work, especially in this environment that is so polarized because of social media, because of sort of where the media in general has gone to. And, you know, there's lots of other reasons why our country is now more divided, whether it's how we draw the congressional lines or all the money in politics that I think needs to go away. So there are plenty of reasons for why it's broken. But here's what I've seen so far, which actually people should be optimistic about. There are a lot of people who are like me in Washington and in Congress who want to sit at the table and try to find a way forward. Like the 46 members of our Problem Solvers Caucus, it's 23 Democrats and 23 Republicans, soon to be 24 of each, that come together every single week around a table to try to figure out, when we're in Washington, what we can work on. So we, early on in this Congress, took on the budget and said, there shouldn't be, when we're voting for a continuing resolution, you shouldn't put a bunch of things that we call ideological riders on it, things that are unrelated to the legislation that you're trying to pass. So we took a position together and said, don't put on things like the wall or Planned Parenthood onto a budget deal to keep the government operating. And we all banded together and voted as a block on that front. And what we do in our group is, when you get to 75% of the caucus agreeing, we vote together. We also agree never to raise money against or campaign against anybody else who sits around the table. So that's a big deal, right? So we say to each other, we're going to work together and we got to build trust together. And that means spending time together and agreeing that we aren't going to try to get you out, right, if you sit at that table. So that was the first move on budget. And then secondly, we took on what everyone told us we could never or should never take on, which is healthcare. So after healthcare was done in a very partisan, one-sided way and continued to fail, in my view, because of that, because it was going to try to kill the ACA and gut it, not actually fix it. The Affordable Care Act. So many of us said, wait, we're not going to fix the whole thing, but there are parts of this that we can take on which will stop premiums from going up, that will make sure that people with pre-existing conditions get covered, and that we can help bring more choice to people on the individual marketplace. So we came together and 83% of us, more than the 75% needed, agreed on something. It was the day after, if you remember, John McCain that came to the Senate floor and very late at night and voted no and stopped the Senate version of what would kill the Affordable Care Act. And we then came together the next morning, 40 plus of us sitting in a table around a room we'd been working for weeks late at night, just us, trying to get to yes and see what we can come to and there's an agreement on. And we got there. And it was a big deal. It doesn't make everyone happy because every time you come up with an 80% solution, you don't get everything you want. But it would really help, in my view, save a key aspect of the Affordable Care Act and make sure that people do get coverage and can afford coverage and keep premiums down, but also make key fixes to it. So that's what we agreed to, and that was our first move. We're now spending a lot of time on DACA and border security.
DACA, of course, is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals.
Right. So for young people and young adults who are in our country, whose parents brought them over or are here not on choice of their own, and this administration and others have floated sending them out of the country in a period of time if we don't solve this issue. And we think that's against our values, and many of us do. And many of us also believe in tough border security. So the question is, can we come up with an agreement that covers both? And that's what we're working on right now.
I'd like now to turn to the Republican tax plan, because I know you're generally in favor of lowering taxes.
I am.
So what is your assessment of the GOP tax bill, which is designed to slash taxes primarily for companies and overhaul the tax code for virtually every American family and individual? Are you in favor of it?
Well, I definitely don't agree with that description. It sounds like you read that off their talking points. The bill that's been proposed in the House, and I support lowering corporate tax rates. We have the highest corporate tax rates of all OECD countries, and I think it's causing us to send jobs overseas and also perversely not bring back profits overseas to the United States for American companies not to bring back their profits because the taxes are cheaper over there than they are here. So we need to close loopholes and shelters and bring our rates down. And as somebody who was in the corporate world, I think that's good and will help our competitiveness as a country and increase jobs here. So I agree with that part of the proposal. The problem with what they propose is the reform is all coming at the cost of certain states, like mine, say New Jersey. What they're doing is eliminating a provision called the state and local tax deduction, commonly referred to as SALT. Right now in New Jersey, before I pay my federal tax bill, we deduct what we pay in state taxes to prevent us being doubly taxed, right? So you're getting taxed on the same amount of income twice. What you do is you deduct your what you pay in your state income tax in New Jersey. If you're higher income, it's 9%. And you also can deduct what you pay in your property taxes, which in New Jersey are very expensive. We're a higher cost state, given that we're in the New York metro area. Things cost more. So therefore, we make more and pay more in taxes than other parts of the country. So a lot of people in my state, on average, under this plan, every family in New Jersey's taxes will go up because of this inability to deduct. And that is a huge problem for me. I'm for tax cuts. I've made it very clear I want our taxes to go down. The problem with this bill is it's great if you live in Oklahoma, where a cost of a house might be $140,000, much less than an average $500,000 to $600,000 cost of a house. And your property taxes in Oklahoma, on average, are $1,250. That is one-tenth or so of what they are where I live. So this is great for a part of the country that's not ours. And I'm against raising taxes in my district. I will not do it. And this bill does it. And they admit that it does it. They're paying for tax reform on the backs of people like me in New Jersey, in my district. And that's why you've got Republicans and Democrats. Leonard Lance, who's a Republican from the district next door of mine, is opposed to tax reform just like I am because it raises taxes on us.
Well, that leads me to ask you, do you think it's going to pass before Christmas? President Trump said he wants a tax bill on his desk by Christmas. And, of course, we note that this would be, if it did pass, the first major legislative accomplishment at a time when the Trump administration doesn't have too many to chalk up to its score.
Here's what I think is going to happen, at least in the short run. I think the House will likely pass this bill, and it will then go to the Senate. The House will pass the bill because they're writing off a bunch of Republicans from states like ours, our salt states, the ones that are higher cost. So that's why they're just writing off the Republican votes from, you know, the states that they're assaulting. You know, this is an assault on New Jersey and New York and other places, and they're just going to write off those Republican votes, and they're soon not going to get the Democratic votes. They think they'll get there, and I, you know, if you made me bet today, I'd say they probably will get there because there's just, they can afford to lose a bunch of Republicans and still win their vote. What happens in the Senate, I don't know. But I'll give you an example. If you're in Paramus, New Jersey, where I live, my district, then the Paramus is a couple towns over from where my family lives. If you're a cop and a teacher, and you make about $200,000 a year in New Jersey, and your house will cost you in those towns about $500,000. That's just what property values are. And you pay your property taxes. And you deduct what you give to your church. Say, right, you tithe and you deduct that off because you can. Your taxes will go up $5,000 a year under this plan. Up, not down. Tax increase, not decrease. Right? And what's equally appalling is that right now, if you look at, if I were to show you a map of the country, and you said, well, what does everyone pay into the federal government versus what they get back in their states, right? Just what you pay in federal taxes versus what you get back for roads, bridges, other services, because there's grants available, there's money back to the states. If you look at it, you'd be amazed. The people who are going to benefit from this tax hike plan that they proposed are actually the same people who have benefited from the nickels of people like me in New Jersey, because for every dollar we send to the federal government, New Jersey, we get back 67 cents. In my district, we get back 33 cents for every dollar we send to the federal government. You compare that to a state like Mississippi that will benefit a lot from this tax hike plan. They get back $4.38 for every dollar they send to the federal government. We're getting back 33 cents. They're getting $4.38 back already, right? So as it is, we're footing the bill. I call those states affectionately moocher states. We are footing the bill for those moocher states, and now they're just piling on because they can, because they're going to get their votes, and they're going to lose Republicans and Democrats in my state.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our special guest is Congressman Josh Gottheimer, a Democrat from the state of New Jersey who serves on the House Financial Services Committee and is co-chair of the Problem Solvers Caucus. I'm Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our Press Conference USA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to loyal listener Gimba Solomon Maliki from Kaduna State, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to PCUSA@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. We'll back to our special guest, Congressman Josh Gottheimer from the state of New Jersey. Let's turn now to foreign policy briefly.
Sure.
President Trump is just coming off of his trip to the Asia Pacific. I wanted to get your assessment of his performance. Do you think he advanced U.S. leadership on the question of security and trade? Or as some analysts say, perhaps he may have even set us back. How do you see it?
Really, time will tell, you know, how our relationships continue to develop. I think it's very important that he talks about trade, and I think it's incredibly important that he talks about security, given what we're facing in the world right now. And I, you know, with the rise of terror and ISIS, I think it's critical that we work closely with our allies all over the world to stomp out threats of terror. And so I think that's a very important agenda item, and I'm glad that he's bringing that up. And I've worked a lot on this issue and put out legislation on this issue, making sure that our relationship, you look at North Korea, Iran, you've got deep threats in the world that we're facing. And I really believe it's critical that we are working closely with our allies there.
Now, of course, he has repudiated the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And some Democrats and some Republicans are saying that that was a mistake. This was President Obama's signature trade agreement with 11 countries, and now those countries are just going forward without the United States. Do you think that will hurt the United States and its standing in the world?
Well, you know, what I think is key is, you know, he's already made that decision. So now, instead of relitigating, I think we need to figure out, where does that leave us, to your point? And how do we make sure if we're going to have side agreements, seems like they're going to have side agreements, what are our side agreements? How do we make sure that we continue to have trade? In a way, as the president has pointed out, that ensures that people aren't taking advantage of our country and violating any trade rules. And I think, unfortunately, historically, we haven't done enough to enforce those who break our agreements. But I think really now the question is going to be, what does this look like in the months ahead? How will trade work? What is it? Is there going to be a freeze, or is actually going to be a thaw on some of these issues? You know, and how much of this is rhetoric versus reality? And only time will tell how this all plays out.
Time will tell, but some critics are saying that policies that favor America first, for example, the slogan that President Trump uses, just serve to isolate the United States on the world stage. Some people in the foreign policy establishment are actually disturbed by the lack of senior-level appointments at the State Department, for example, not to mention proposed budget cuts that could severely hamper our diplomatic outreach.
We need to always use diplomacy first. Of course, it's critical that we have the best people in those positions around the world and at home. And I think you'd be hard-pressed to find Republicans or Democrats on the Hill who don't believe that that's essential. We also need to make sure that we are, frankly, doing everything possible to be vigilant. North Korea is clearly a threat, and other countries around the world have shown that we need to do everything possible to be on top of what they're doing. A lot of times it's hard to separate out the rhetoric versus reality. Just making statements or a tweet are different than what we're doing, and I think it's key to actually look at both. And that's why I say time will tell, because I think there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that we're not privy to. I'm on the terrorist financing subcommittee, as you mentioned, of the Financial Services Committee. And so, you know, I spend a lot of time looking at classified information, which obviously I can't share here, but shows the threats that we're facing around the world. The money that's moving around to ISIS and Hezbollah and to Hamas, we're facing, and Al-Qaeda, we're facing fronts all over the place and at home. We saw a couple weeks ago a very sad incident in New York City of a homegrown, sort of a lone wolf terrorist who ISIS-inspired, drove a truck over people, killed a young man from my district. We're seeing more and more incidents of that. I'm deeply concerned about that. It's part of why I'm spending a lot of time on the committee that I am on and digging into this issue, and I've introduced legislation about it. We are in uncertain times, as you know, all over the world, and facing threats at home. And I think how we're doing our job, put aside some of the rhetoric, but how we're doing our job. I've met with a lot of people out of this administration who are doing excellent work, a lot of people who are career people who are doing incredible work as well. And I think we have to be careful not to broad brush everything, but really make sure, and that's Congress's job too, to stay on top of everything, to make sure we're doing everything possible to protect people at home.
Indeed, and of course, Congress does allocate the budget, so perhaps proposed budget cuts to key areas could be overridden by the Congress in order for you to get the resources you need to do your job.
Well, I'll tell you, I voted a couple weeks ago, and I know it was across the aisle, and people weren't thrilled with me because I wanted to make sure that there were more resources for the military and the VA when vets returned home to make sure that we have the resources we need to stay tough. And you're right that we have to watch where the resources are allocated, and then how they're implemented to make sure that we're doing everything humanly possible to keep us safe. And so I think you're right that our job is to be vigilant.
I'd like to turn now to a topic that sort of intersects foreign and domestic policy, Congressman Gottheimer, and that's the disinformation campaign that the Russians conducted in the run-up to and during the 2016 presidential election campaign. We know very well from our intelligence agencies, as well as the executives of these social media companies, Google, Facebook, and Twitter, that the Russians conducted a sophisticated disinformation campaign on social media platforms. They manipulated algorithms. They were able to reach millions of Americans through fake accounts and ads, the purpose of which was to push hot-button issues, to amplify social and political divisions in our society, and even encourage public protest. Now, some lawmakers, you're probably aware, are actually sponsoring legislation, something called the Honest Ads Act, mm-hmm. that would require election-related online advertising be subject to the same disclosure and disclaimer requirements as other media companies. Now, this might not be the end-all and be-all, this legislation, but what is your position on something like that? Are you in favor of that?
Well, so my position on, and there's several bills that take on more transparency, and my position in general is transparency is essential. But it's not just, you know, little tinkers. You got to be careful of thinking that little tinkers are going to be the answer. What we need to do is get back to the root of this, which is the fact that it seems clear, and there's clear evidence, that there was meddling. The question is, how do we make sure this doesn't happen again? And this is not partisan, right? You hear Democrats and Republicans saying this is a real problem, the fact that another country was messing with our elections and getting involved in our process. As Americans and as people who, as the leading democracy in the world, we cannot have it that our core fundamentals are violated in any way. And voting and our elections are core to our democracy. That, to me, is not even remotely partisan and something that we have to be really on top of and understanding how we prevent this from ever happening again. I'm not convinced that I've seen any legislation so far which really will, you know, how do we really get to the bottom of this and prevent it from happening? Put aside, again, any election, specific elections. How do we make sure that the next round of elections we don't face this issue? And, you know, and a lot of that, to your point before, is making sure that our intelligence agencies have what they need to be aware and to prevent and then to raise flags. And this is where we need the private sector to work hand in glove to make sure also that when they see an issue happening or if they sense an issue is happening, that they also raise a flag to law enforcement and say, when to the intelligence community, saying, I think we might have a problem here. Even if, you know, it turns out to be nothing, you got to look at it. And that's a concern that I have.
Indeed. And of course, some of these social media companies have to be as concerned, if not more concerned, about U.S. national security than their bottom lines.
Yeah, as somebody who worked in a technology company, remember, things move fast, and you have to be, you know, because new technology is coming up all the time, and the key is to make sure that you try to be ahead of it. And sometimes, because we love technology and innovation, I do, you're not pausing enough to say, okay, what could be the negative effects of this, and how do we make sure we stop it? And how do we know when we see something that might be an issue that we're putting enough processes and other technology in place to flag it and prevent it? And if you ask the technology companies now, they would say, yeah, sure, you're right, we shouldn't be doing more. So now the question is, will they? And I think it's up to us to make sure they do. With that, by the way, it is a false choice to say that you have to stop innovation, technology, and advancement, and also be vigilant of our national security. That's a false choice.
Right? No, of course. Nobody would even...
No, but some do throw that out and right. Say, well, you have to make a choice, and I just think that's a false choice.
Innovation is, in fact, being aware of how bad actors can misuse a social media platform for nefarious reasons, and therefore...
Correct. You know, I worked at the FCC, and as a parent of a 5-year-old and 8-year-old, I don't let them go near the technology now, but, you know, soon enough they'll have their own devices. And, you know, as a parent, you worry to make sure what your kids are seeing. And, you know, if they have access to, you know, you'd be on YouTube and you don't know what they're watching. And how do you make sure that they're, you know, we know that a lot of these homegrown terrorists, I was watching this on 60 Minutes a couple weeks ago. So this program of homegrown terrorists, you know, watching on YouTube, sitting in their living room, getting fed ISIS-driven rhetoric and inspiring hate and teaching a whole nother army without ever, you know, you don't have to go get trained overseas. You can get trained in your living room. And to me, we have to be all over this. And, you know, I introduced legislation to stop the funding of homegrown terrorists here to make sure they're not getting the resources here, that we can freeze their accounts through due process, but freeze accounts of potential threats. And I just think, you know, in this day and age, it's because of technology, which we love, we just have to make sure that we're on top of it because there are so many areas where bad actors can use it.
Indeed, and that's an area where a certain amount of regulations are very justifiable.
Well, you see with Equifax a couple weeks ago, which was, to remind your listeners, this was the credit bureaus that check your credit or report to if you were going to buy a home or get a credit card that check your credit. There was a huge breach, 150+ million people where their records opened up. And, you know, in my view, and if you listen to the testimony, they were not doing nearly enough to be on top of it for security, from a cybersecurity perspective when it happened, but also then after to make sure people knew and what to do about it. And I think it's a huge violation of people's trust. And you realize that hackers from around the world can get into our information and they're doing it. And we have to make sure we prevent it. You have to, because it's not just from a security perspective, it's also people's financial security.
And that leads me to mention briefly about our own NSA, National Security Agency. We have a team of hackers, and they were hacked, but that's a whole different story. We don't have time to go into that, so we really have to be very vigilant. As we close, Congressman Gottheimer, I know you're the co-chair of the Problem Solvers Caucus, a very bipartisan group, and that's terrific. On the other hand, you're a Democrat, and I assume that you're interested in the prospects for Democrats. So I'd like to get your view on, for example, recent wins by Democrats in the state of Virginia, having captured, again, the governorship, other down ballot, as we call them, races, the win in New Jersey. So to what extent do these victories for Democrats give you some optimism for the future, perhaps even in the 2018 legislative elections?
I'm not going to armchair because we have plenty of analysts who are good at that. But I'll say this. I think what I'm hearing more and more of at home is that people are so sick of the extremism and moving to the wings. And frankly, both sides of the aisle are not spending enough time working together and actually coming together. And when we see things like the way healthcare was initially done, which was to jam it and not work in a bipartisan way, which I'm glad we've changing that, or if you look at how tax reform is moving so far, which has not been with any Democratic input, it's all one-sided. That, to me, is not good governing. Good governing is both sides coming together. Elections are elections. Now we got to govern. And the question now is, how do you govern and make sure that we work together? And I think people are going to continue to be frustrated if we don't actually take the time to spend time together figuring out solutions and just go to our extremes and scream. And so people are very frustrated, and rightly so, with what goes on here in Washington. It's why I ran, why I initially decided to help spend time in the Problem Solvers Caucus, because I really believe that's the only way we're going to get into the details and start governing together again. Legislation is durable and will last generations if it's done together. When it's a party line vote, the other side feels excluded and is never happy with how it comes out because they didn't have a voice in the process. And I think it's very important that we all have a voice in this process. That's why people elect us and we represent our districts. I'm going to keep working to try to find those areas where we can work together. And when we get jammed with a piece of legislation, like a tax hike bill, I'm going to speak out. And I think that's our job here.
Do you think Democrats have the ability to appeal to the so-called white working class voters, many of whom are both college and non-college educated, who did vote for President Trump and other Republicans?
Yes. I mean, I can just speak to my experience. I'm a big supporter of law enforcement, firefighters, cops, people who build homes and businesses and companies and buildings. And that's, by the way, they're people of all backgrounds in those coalitions. And there's no reason why we can't do well with everyone. But I think we have to be willing to not, and this is important, we have to be willing to work across the aisle and not be so strident on either side. There's a reason why the Tea Party, I believe, won't be successful in the future. And, I think, my side of the aisle has to be willing to also move toward the middle. And like me, I think we need lower taxes and less outdated regulation. But socially, I'm as progressive as it gets. Like, I think there is a place where you can be tough, where I think you need to be, but also, be open-minded in line with our values. And making sure that we're in line with American values is very important.
And before we close quickly, Congressman Gottheimer, you have about another year to go. What else would you like to accomplish before the term ends?
I got a long list. We've got to deal with transportation and infrastructure, which is a huge problem. We've got to, again, get something done that actually fixes the ACA, doesn't kill it, because we've got premiums are going up, and it's really hurting people with pre-existing conditions and seniors and who are getting thrown off their health care, can't afford it. That's a big issue for me. And I want to see tax cuts. This bill is a tax hike, so I'm hoping that
Even though it's billed as a tax cut.
Right, that's just spin for some people, but if you actually study the legislation and sit with accountants, I sat with 10 accountants this week, and most of them weren't from my party, and they all said one thing: this is a tax increase for New Jersey. Now, I don't represent Oklahoma, right? That's or Mississippi. That's not my job. They run their own math. All I know is I'm paying for this tax reform. New Jersey's paying for this tax reform. The residents of my district are paying for their tax reform. And we're going to face higher taxes, and it's going to hurt businesses and push jobs out of my state and push people away from my state because it'll make it more expensive to live there. That, to me, is not an okay solution. And so I'll keep working on this. And so my hope, by the time I'm done, is to get actually a tax bill that reduces taxes for people, for businesses, and makes things more affordable for people. That's my goal.
Are you planning to run for re-election?
I am. I'm going.
Congressman Josh Gottheimer is a Democrat from the state of New Jersey. He's also co-chair of the Problem Solvers Caucus. Congressman, thanks so much for your terrific insights
Thanks.
And for hosting us here.
Thanks for having me.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Rebecca Ward for booking our guest. Our engineer and producer was Ted Schneider. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.